Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What are the movies worth watching in the theater this holiday season? Which ones can wait until they show up on Netflix? And which ones should you avoid wasting your time or your money on? My guests today have enjoyed many of the year's best and endured a fair number of the worst films so that you don't have to, and they're here now to share their expert opinions. Christopher Kelly writes for Texas Monthly and the New York Times. Dallas Morning News movie critic Chris Wagner and KERA's Stephen Becker are co-hosts of The Big Screen, which airs Thursdays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered. Guys, welcome back to Think.
Hey, Chris.
Thanks for having us.
All right, Chris Kelly, congratulations. You are a newlywed, so you get the first question.
Awesome. Thank
That's
you.
What you get.
Thank you very much.
What's the strangest place?
This is not the newlywed show. Game. Thank you. Boy, my career will have really taken a nosedive when we get to those questions. Worst movie out there. I thought that you would enjoy that one as an opening.
Oh, I'd love to do that one. Saving Mr. Banks, the Tom Hanks playing Walt Disney and Emma Thompson playing P.L. Travers, the author of Mary Poppins.
I'm sad because I wanted to like that.
This movie is like the reverse of a communist propaganda film you might have seen from the Soviets. It's pure capitalist pro-Disney propaganda produced by the Walt Disney Company about Disney, trying to whip into shape the mean-spirited and cynical P.L. Travers, who doesn't want Disney to take her precious Mary Poppins and ruin it. And this movie is so cynical about women, about artists. It's all about just the greatness of Disney, and you know, you have to come to see how great our vision is for Mary Poppins, and artists don't know what they're talking about. And so sexist. Emma Thompson's character is portrayed as just this old biddy. The real P.L. Travers was actually a really interesting, complex woman, bisexual, had a kid. None of that's in the movie. She's just this British harridan who you can't stand watching. And worse than all that, it's really boring. It has this very conventional flashback structure. This is getting talked up for a possible best picture.
I liked it a lot better than you did. I mean, I agree that it's a 2-hour Disney ad, and, you know, it's the whole thing. Like, Walt Disney's a great guy, unless you were in a union, or Jewish, or black, or any of that stuff. So, no, but
or had facial hair.
Completely whitewashes Walt Disney.
It's not about that. I thought it was fine. I mean, I thought Emma Thompson was great. It's not really my kind of movie, but I liked it more than I thought I would. I agree with all of your criticisms. I just don't think they're all that germane to what this movie is trying to do.
And I think this is a perfect chance to remind people, because I think we're going to be talking about several movies that also fit into this category this hour, that this is a narrative film that has, you know, it's based in history and tells a story, but it's not a documentary. And I know that you're not saying it is, but this is going to come up over and over this hour about how much leeway people take with the story. In this particular instance, as you both had mentioned, Disney wanted to tell the Disney-fied story that suits their needs.
And it falls into this kind of Disney model of a feel-good redemption story. It turns out that P.L. Travers has this sad story from her past, which we watch through these tedious flashbacks with Colin Farrell as her father.
He was very good, by the way.
He was good, but, you know, the best-looking drunk in Australia. And it just felt so artificial to me. It felt like Disney making the ultimate Disney movie about another Disney movie. It's like echo chamber of Disney.
Is it worse than the Renee Zellweger pick about Beatrix Potter 5 or 6 years ago? Do you remember that one?
I do remember
it's
that
about
one.
At that level.
It's about the same. I wanted to say really quickly, there is a couple of nice scenes in this movie where you see how some of the songs come up. There's a little team that's charged with, you know, bringing the music to the movie. And there is one funny scene when they kind of win her over by showing her Let's Go Fly a Kite.
And it's Jason Schwartzman and is it
B.J. Novak?
B.J. Novak. Yeah. And at the end, she says that she likes us, but she likes the song, but technically it should be Let Us Go and Fly a Kite.
So I think there's a lot of little moments like that. I thought she was fantastic. But yeah, it is basically saying all any movie needs is Walt Disney's golden touch, which is, yeah, it is what it is.
All right, let's talk about some of the family movies this year. Have anybody seen Frozen?
No.
That's been the movie. I feel like that's been the movie that's been evading me. The problem with, I shouldn't say it's a problem, but they always screen those family films like that on Saturdays at like 10 a.m., which is not great movie critic.
Although now you have the screener.
Yeah, Stephen and I pledged we were going to watch it before today, and yeah, there's so many movies this season.
You have the screener sitting on your coffee table,
I do. And I will say that's the movie that I haven't seen yet that I have wanted to see, mostly because everyone who's seen it has told me how good it is.
Plus, it's Disney, and Disney's, you know, God.
So. I was excited for The Book Thief, but the reviews have been poor.
They have been, and it makes you wonder, you know, have we finally run out of World War II era stories to tell? I don't know, maybe.
Never. Well, Monuments Man is coming up, so
yeah,
I guess hopefully I'm looking forward to that one.
But I think it's also a challenge of translating these hit young adult stories. Sometimes it works with The Hunger Games and Twilight. Not that the Twilight movies were very good, but certainly very popular. But I think a lot of times some things gets lost. I think we saw that with The Host this year and Divergence coming up. We'll see how that does. I don't know. It's a tough category to get right, what works for those that teen audience.
So you mentioned The Hunger Games. What did you think of that?
Chris Kelly loved The Hunger Games.
I was a little disappointed with The Hunger Games. I felt like the second one just sort of ran the clock on the story. I know that happens a lot with middle entries in trilogies, but this one particularly seemed to go on for a really long time. Love Jennifer Lawrence. She's having quite a season. But I thought this one was a little overrated.
I thought it was good, but I wasn't expecting much, so I didn't really rate it going in. I went out of professional obligation and left the theater actually really enjoying what I'd seen. I thought it was more of a movie than the first one. It kind of reminded me of when Chris Columbus passed the Harry Potter franchise on to more capable hands. I felt like this actually had a visual vision to go with the story.
Is there less shaky cam this time?
Yeah. It's true. Francis Lawrence, who's done Constantine and I Am Legend, he does these big scaled action movies very well, very stylishly. And I think that comes through. It's a more interesting setting, too, I think, than the first one in this strange jungle that has a big pie in the middle of it. And
so many great character actors, too. Like, and it's everywhere you turn is a great character actor in that movie.
And it's fairly faithful to the book as well. So, I mean, fans of the story, I think, are going to go right in and probably see what they've been imagining for so long put up on screen, which is a pretty neat experience.
I actually thought, though, that the first book was vastly superior to the other two. I agree. Read them all.
The second one was the first one I quite enjoyed. The second one was a slog to the end. I couldn't wait for it to be done.
The first one is my favorite. It's also the only one that I read.
By default.
All right, what about Desolation of Smaug? Have you guys seen it? I just like saying Smaug, by the way.
Smaug. It's long.
Is it? Well, of course it's long.
No.
It's not that long a book, and he's making three-hour movies out of this book that just isn't very long. Everybody seems to like this one better than the first one. I like the first one better. I actually felt some kind of connection with this hobbit leaving home, leaving the Shire for the first time thing and being accepted. I just didn't feel any emotional pull in the new one. But I'm in the minority there. And I'm not a hobbit guy. So I had to sort of write it from the perspective of the Tolkien agnostic and come clean that I did not grow up on these books.
So I saw the first one, which I really did not like. I sort of, you know, like the book, like most people do. And to Chris's point, this is not a story that requires three movies to tell. In fact, I want somebody to take the challenge of once the third movie comes out, I want to hit play on the movie, and then I want to have somebody else start to read the book. And if you can read the entire book before the three movies are done, there's a problem there. The first one was so much excess of walking and fighting. And I just figured that this would be more of the same. So gleefully, I had another obligation that night. That's the good thing about this time of year is there's multiple things screening every night. So you can legitimately say, you know, I had something else I had to see.
I had to wash my hair.
Which no one in that movie ever does. All right. Let's see what else is out. Thor. Have you guys seen Thor?
I have not seen Thor. I'm kind of worn out on these second-tier Marvel superhero movies at this point.
All right.
Send all complaints to Chris Wagner.
Okay, Dallas Buyers Club, which I have actually seen, thanks to Stephen Becker. I thought it was great. What did you guys think?
I'm gonna once again have the minority opinion on this one. I found it, first of all, very conventional. It's a very familiar guy-against-the-system kind of movie. Ron Woodruff, who decides he's going to create his own AIDS drug regimen against the wishes of the FDA and the local Dallas hospital. More than that, I had a real problem with another Hollywood movie that frames the AIDS crisis in terms of a heterosexual male's
straight
awakening.
Guy saves everyone
we've
from
been,
AIDS.
Yeah, we've been watching this movie for nearly 30 years. We watched it in Philadelphia 20 years ago. When do we get to move beyond this narrative? I'm surprised more people haven't criticized it on those grounds. I found it really a little bit offensive in that regard.
I will say the 80s level homophobia was hard to watch, and I had just come off watching 12 Years a Slave, and the sure. Civil War era racism was hard to watch, and it felt a little excessive to me, the way that everybody reacted. It was like nobody in 1985 was anything other than homophobic.
I agree with Chris's point that it's a pretty conventionally told story. I would say great performances, a pretty good movie, and absolutely no sense of place whatsoever.
They did get the D symbol right on the police cars.
There was that scene where it was just such a blatantly green-screened Dallas skyline, and we all know why, because it's cheaper to shoot movies in Louisiana. It's just the reality of the finances, but I felt like that movie really could have benefited from a sense of place.
We talked about that on a big screen episode, that they sort of compensate by not shooting here by just having an excess of Texas flags. Every scene there's a Texas flag. But there were really strong performances in this movie, particularly Jared Leto as a guy that, or a person, I should say, that Matthew McConaughey meets along the way, who kind of, I think, to maybe Chris, your complaint kind of represents everyone else in the AIDS epidemic.
Yeah, and of course they just lay it on so thick. It's like, of course, the guy who represents the AIDS crisis is this sort of transsexual who's, you know, has a rich father. It just felt like one cliche after another. And I agree, the performances were impressive, very physically difficult, commanding performances. But this one really left me cold.
If you want to see a great film about the AIDS epidemic, How to Survive a Plague, the Oscar-nominated documentary.
Which covers a lot of the same territory that you'll see in this movie.
It is fantastic.
All right, let's go to what's opening this week. Anyone seen the Tyler Perry movie?
They don't generally screen those. Tyler's very smart. He knows that the critics will savage him and therefore does not screen his movies in advance. Smart guy, good businessman.
But the guy makes like 3 movies a year and they all do fairly well,
him.
Right?
Yeah, he doesn't need us. More power to him.
The Hours. Have you guys seen that? This is the one about the guy who's trying to save his daughter, keep her alive after Hurricane Katrina.
I have not. I saw the Virginia.
It's a Paul Walker film, actually.
Oh, wow. Oh, this is the Paul Walker film. We haven't seen that.
Rest in peace.
Okay. Let's see. Some of these that are coming out this week seem fairly obscure, but
The Great Beauty is coming out this week.
The Great Beauty. What's that?
It's one of my favorite films of the year, actually. It's an Italian movie about a writer sort of stumbling toward grace. It's such a great looking movie. It's mesmerizing, and I think it's been compared to Fellini and La Dolce Vita, an 8.5, and I think justifiably so. I think it is hypnotically beautiful and actually pretty emotionally resonant.
I don't think it's been a great year for foreign films, but that is a standout. And I would also mention Broken Circle Breakdown, which I think is opening before the year's out here from Belgium. I think those two are going to end up in the Best Foreign Language Oscar competition, and it'll be a good showdown if one of those wins.
We are talking about movies, and we would love to hear from you at 1-800-933-5372. My guests this hour are Chris Wagner, Christopher Kelly, and Stephen Becker. You can also get to the show by emailing think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Classes are available in everything from fine arts to financial planning. Spring registration is open now. You can learn more and register online at smu.edu/think.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are beginning our descent into Los Angeles.
Welcome, Mrs. P.L. Travers, to the City of Angels.
It smells like...
jasmine.
Chlorine. And sweat.
Introducing the creator of our beloved Mary.
Poppins. Never, ever just Mary. Now, where is Mr. Disney?
She's here.
Well, Pamela Travers, you can't imagine how excited I am to finally meet you.
Would you mind? My name is Mrs. Travers, Mr. Disney.
In the 70s, they were an elite unit with names like Brick, Champ, Brian, and Ron. They rose like the phoenix, and then they were gone. Until now.
We're starting a 24-hour news channel, and we want you.
I'm going to do the thing that God put Ron Burgundy on this earth to do. Have salon-quality hair and read the news.
Now we just have to survive this blizzard!
That's no blizzard!
Sorcery.
That's my sister! Olaf, you're melting.
Some people are worth melting for.
You're just maybe not right this second. Come on, buddy, faster! No!
There were some scenes from Saving Mr. Banks, followed by Anchorman 2 and Frozen. We are talking about movies for the holiday season with Chris Vogner, Christopher Kelly, and Stephen Becker. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. All right, Chris Vogner is a former local television news anchor and reporter. I am sort of a proud fan of the Anchorman thing. How's Anchorman 2? Is it
well,
good?
Chris, I am of two minds about it. I thought it went back to the well a few too many times because it has to kind of check off the old bits that worked in the first movie. I still thought it was really funny. I mean, those guys do what they do very well, and it manages to sneak in quite a bit of satire about what cable news has become. So it sort of has this ability to have its cake and eat it too, so to speak.
Is there an afternoon delight moment in this movie? Because that's why I would go see it in the theater instead of waiting for it.
There is a lot of great music, but sadly no afternoon delight.
That was the best scene in that last movie. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Heather on the line in Arlington. Hey, Heather.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good. I just, two little quick comments. One, there are a lot of important movies that need to be made and need to be seen, like 12 Years a Slave and Dallas Buyers Club. But if they're hard to watch, you really have to see Thor because it's totally silly and totally fun and completely escapist and has no redeeming quality. But it's very, very easy to watch. The other thing I wanted to ask this gentleman is if they've seen Josh Wheaton's Much to Do About Nothing and what they thought of that.
Oh, thanks so much for your call. And I'll check out Thor one of these days.
Yeah.
I'm really glad she reminded me of that, actually, because that's a really, really good Shakespeare adaptation, just very streamlined and modern. And the key for a lot of those movies is to know what to cut and how to cut and make it a movie. And I thought Much Ado did that really, really well.
And is Joss Whedon, is he the one that would have these, like, parties at his house, and that's kind of where the movie came from?
Yeah, he filmed the whole thing at his house and basically with his friends, including Amy Acker, who's a Lake Highlands graduate, plays one of the main characters in the movie. It's shot in really beautiful black and white, and they certainly, you know, it's updated, characters have cell phones, things like that. But it looks great, and he was at South by Southwest this year, and some of us talked to him, and he just said, you know, location scouting was easy. You just roll out of bed and say, oh, I think I'll shoot in the room next door. But if you haven't seen it, I think the best thing I can say about it is with some Shakespeare plays, if you don't know the whole story going in, it's real easy to get lost if you, you know, miss something in the language. And that's, you know, that happens to the best of us. I think the biggest strength of this movie is Whedon makes it very understandable. I mean, just be present and watch it. And if you're someone who's maybe a little scared of Shakespeare and not understanding, I think you'll understand this whole one.
All right, 12 Years a Slave. It's been out for a while now, but I think it's still on a lot of people's lists of movies they want to get to by the end of the year. Thoughts?
Tough to watch at times, but it's a great film. I mean, it's easily the best American movie that's been made about slavery, which is not saying a whole lot, but it really shows what the institution was from so many different perspectives. Including the persecutors. I mean, you have the persecuted Solomon Northup, played by Chiwetel Ejiofor. Am I pronouncing his name
right? I believe
right?
so.
Gentleman.
Very well.
But it also just sort of peels back just how nasty and insidious an institution it was from pretty much not every possible perspective, but it digs deep. And it's tough to watch. And it's a great movie. I highly, highly recommend going to see it, even though it is, in fact, a tough subject, obviously.
I think I have the more complicated reaction where I respected it a great deal but didn't entirely know if it succeeded. It's brilliantly made. The performances are stunning. Lupita Nyong'o, who plays the slave who befriends Solomon, is extraordinary. Yep. Newcomer. Sarah Paulson, revelatory as... Yep. Michael Fassbender's wife, Fassbender, who plays the slave owner. But I ultimately felt the structure of it was such that every scene is designed to kind of take you to the same point where Solomon has a moment of hope and then he's crushed, has a moment of hope and then he's crushed. And the structure of it became repetitive. And I know we're in sort of dicey terrain here because then the counter argument to that is, well, this is what slavery was. I just don't know if, as a movie-watching experience, I found it very satisfying.
What I've been trying to work out in my mind, and I haven't quite come to the answer yet, is I think there's something there that it took this essentially British team of filmmakers. Mm-hmm. I mean, Steve McQueen, the director, and then a lot of the main cast, including Ejiofor and Michael Fassbender. I think it's interesting that it took that team to tell in the most honest way this truly American story.
But doesn't the movie feel a little cold and a little detached to you? I think that was another thing that I got kind of hung up on. There's something kind of clinical about the way Steve McQueen makes movies, and I respect it. I just didn't know if that ultimately was the best way to handle the story.
It felt very lived in to me. It felt very sweaty and grimy and painful. That's not detached at all.
The thing McQueen, I think, is known for, and he particularly does it in this movie, is he picks out two or three moments that he makes a scene last almost twice as much as you sort of feel the rhythm of it should. And they're key moments where he is rubbing your nose in this slavery institution. There's one, I mean, the most gripping, wrenching scene for me. Well, I mean, it's hard to even say that because there's so many of them, but one where one of the slaves is being whipped, you're sitting there and you're thinking, okay, this is about to be over. I can get back comfortable. And nope, it goes on for another few minutes. And he is really shoving it in your face and making you come to terms with this, you know, our history.
Yeah, there's no easy out in 12 Years a Slave, as there are in so many other movies. And Chris, you mentioned this phenomenon of the AIDS movie told from the straight perspective.
Yeah.
You can say that there is also all these slavery movies that are told from the noble white hero's perspective. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing, although I guess Brad Pitt does show up and help a great deal in this one. It's not his movie. It is very much Solomon Northup's story.
I think it's been a really extraordinary year for African-American themed films between this, The Butler, a little hokey, but a really interesting examination of the civil rights era, Fruitvale Station. It was just really, really, I'm probably forgetting some other things, but it's just been a really, really strong year for black cinema.
I thought Blue Caprice was
pretty
extraordinary.
Which is about the Washington sniper
Talk
film.
Talk about tough to watch.
Yeah. Really good year.
1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Everybody's talking about Nebraska, it seems. And it's one of these films that, you know, 12 Years a Slave is the same, that gets a lot of play on NPR specifically. But
it's black and white.
Yeah, it's in black and white. What's not to love? What did you guys think, and would you recommend it?
Well, this is, you know, the role that Bruce Dern has waited 70-something years to finally get to play. And he really makes the most of it. As a man who was a hard drinker, it's never really quite clear, does he have Alzheimer's or dementia, or is this just the effects of a lifetime of drinking? But he's a guy who feels like he's won this million-dollar magazine sweepstakes. And if he can just make it from his home in Montana to Lincoln, Nebraska, he can claim his big prize. Of course, the rest of the people around him know that this is just, you know, some magazine scam. But his son, played by Will Forte, finally takes him there as just an exercise of getting this out of his system. And it's really it's one of those journey stories. But to your question, you know, Bruce Dern is great in it as a guy who is just kind of halfway there through the whole movie.
I just thought this was terrific. It snuck up on me. It's directed by Alexander Payne, whose movies I've always had a hard time with. They sometimes feel like they're making fun of the characters, movies like About Schmidt, and mocking them a little bit. And I always have a tough time kind of getting a handle on what he's doing. And in Nebraska, I got it. You know, I got what he's trying to do, which is kind of poke fun and sort of look at the darkness and the mean-spiritedness of people, but with a big, generous heart. And the way this movie sneaks up on you, especially in the last half hour, and the relationship between Will Forte and Bruce Dern, how it develops, it's just really beautiful. I was in tears at the end. Bruce Stern's going to win the Oscar. He was just terrific.
It's a movie about redemption that doesn't have the usual sentimental traps that movies about redemption always present. It's very blunt, and it's actually very funny.
Yep.
We should mention that as well. It's a kind of a sad movie, but there's some real big, genuine laughs, a lot of them from June Squibb, who's going to get nominated for Best Supporting Actress.
She plays Bruce Dern's wife in the movie, who is just hysterical.
She works blue, ladies and gentlemen.
and Dallas folks may remember, I think about 2 years ago, she starred in the Dallas Theater Center's production of Horton Foote's Dividing the Estate, and she was terrific in that, and it's nice to see her getting the national recognition she deserves. She's just great.
All right, Inside Llewyn Davis. Is this the second un-Coen-y Coen Brothers movie in a row?
What was the previous un-Coen-y
Coen
Brothers
movies? Mm.
See, I think I don't think you ever can tell what they're going to do next. I don't think there's really such a thing as a Coen-y Brothers, Coen Brother, whatever you just said, Chris Boyd.
Coen-y Coen Brothers film.
I think they're really all they go where their hearts take them. I think it's a great movie. I think Oscar Isaac is. I think that's a performance that probably won't get nominated and should. It's a look at the '60s. New York folk scene from an outsider's perspective, and it's a Coen Brothers story about a guy who can't accept the success that is offered to him. It's about a guy who embraces failure, which kind of seems like a running theme throughout a lot of their films.
It's definitely the best-sounding movie of the year. Chris and I talked about that today on the big screen. The music is all done by T-Bone Burnett, Fort Worth native. And if you need no other reason to see this film, it's because you are either reminded or maybe even introduced to some truly American music that is phenomenal. That he, of course, is responsible for bringing to the movie. The Coens have done a great job of doing that through T-Bone Burnett over the years with movies like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? The music in this movie, again, when T-Bone Burnett does your music, he brings this, American soundscape to your movie that it's kind of like reintroducing you to songs that you probably should know, but maybe don't.
And if you like cats also, this is like one of the best cat usages ever.
Oh, I thought you meant like the Betty Buckley.
No, if you like that play. No, there's fantastic use of a feline in this movie. Best use of a cat goes to...
Well, last year we had the dog and the artist, so now we got
there
a cat.
Go.
American Hustle. I'm really interested
we
in
We all saw
film.
That last
yeah,
night.
Yeah, it's all very fresh in our little brains.
I'll let you guys go first.
I thought it was fabulous.
Yeah, Chris loved it.
I really, really thought it was fabulous. It's about the Abscam scandal in the late 1970s when a number of United States congressmen got implicated in... payouts to build casinos in Atlantic City. And David O. Russell, who last year did Silver Linings Playbook, has told this story from the perspective of two con artists played by Christian Bale and Amy Adams, who become entangled with an overly ambitious FBI agent played by Bradley Cooper. And what the movie does is kind of play out the con and the scandal on a kind of macro level. And then on a micro level, you have all the characters kind of conning each other emotionally as they're falling in and out of love with each other. And Jennifer Lawrence plays Christian Bale's wife. She's fabulous. It is a very sophisticated, fun movie. Goes on a little too long. I think that was Chris's complaint about it. But I think this is just a great, fun movie that probably your whole family can enjoy on the holidays. It's just, I loved it.
And it has this mad energy to it that David O. Russell always brings. And yeah, the cast is just fantastic, top to bottom. And I was looking at the book that it's based on last night, which is very good, but also kind of dry. And there's absolutely nothing dry about American Hustle. It makes it all so human and shows how messed up these people are, and yet at the same time we really feel for them, especially Jeremy Renner's character, who plays the mayor of Camden, New Jersey, who gets ensnared in this plot, and he's sort of our surrogate in a sense, who's watching it all happen and ends up getting stung.
The other thing I just want to interject too is I usually hate movies with the word American as the first part of the title.
Americans.
But this was the rare movie where the title is justified because they're all hustle. I mean, it's this sort of ode to how in America we're all just hustling to survive. I think that's one of the last lines in the movie: "Is the art of survival will never end."
Chris, why do you hate America?
That's right.
So, just for my two cents, this movie's worth seeing for Jennifer Lawrence alone. She is actually of the five kind of major roles, she's the one we see the fewest of, but when she is on the screen, the movie gets this energy that, for me, unfortunately, it's tough because when you've got a real dynamo role like that, there can be times where when they're not there, you're kind of like looking at your watch saying, I wonder when she's going to come back around. She's great in the movie as this person who is simultaneously screwing things up and then also providing the solutions to all the problems. Mm-hmm. But I felt like at an hour and a half, this would have been a really great, taut, fun con movie. At a little over 2 hours, it was way too long. Yeah. And there were at times, and I will confess I'm not the first person to say this, but there were times where it felt like David Russell brought all of his friends over to raid their parents' closets and play dress up, you know, with all these sets.
I wondered if that was distracting. I thought they
all really fell into those characters beautifully, especially Jennifer Lawrence, who's just fabulous. Amy Adams was really, really terrific with a hard part. She's talking with a British accent, half to the American accent. And I thought the other thing was they were having fun. You can tell that became infectious.
They were definitely having fun.
Louis C.K. Don't forget Louis C.K. He's awesome.
He was not having fun, though.
We are talking about end of the year movie options with our favorite critics, Stephen Becker, Christopher Kelly, and Chris Wagner. We'll come back to the conversation in a moment. And you can join us at 1-800-933-5372. Send email to think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Classes are available in everything from fine arts to financial planning. Spring registration is open now. You can learn more and register online at smu.edu/think.
Solomon Northup is an expert player on the violin.
I was born a free man, lived with my family in New York.
Be good for your mother.
Until the day I was deceived.
To Solomon.
Kidnapped. Sold into slavery.
Well, boy, how you feel now?
My name is Solomon Northup. I'm a free man.
And you have no right whatsoever to detain me.
You're no free man. You're nothing but a Georgia runaway.
Mr. Woodruff, you've tested positive for HIV. Have you ever used intravenous drugs? Have you ever engaged in homosexual conduct?
Homo. Did you say homo? You made a mistake. That ain't me.
Mr. Woodruff, we estimate you have 30 days left.
Newsflash, y'all. There ain't nothing out there can kill Ron Woodruff in 30 days.
Mr. Theodore Twombly, welcome to the world's first artificially intelligent operating system.
Hi, I'm Samantha.
Good morning, Theodore.
Good morning.
You have a meeting in 5 minutes. You want to try getting out of bed?
You're too funny.
Okay, good. I'm funny. I want to learn everything about everything.
I love the way you look at the world.
How long before you're ready to date?
What do you mean?
I saw in your emails that you'd gone through a breakup.
Well, you're kind of nosy.
So what was it like being married?
There's something that feels so good about sharing your life with somebody.
How do you share your life with somebody? How are you?
I guess I've just been having fun.
You really deserve that.
It's been a long time since I've been with somebody that I felt totally at ease with.
That was a sampling of, let's see, that one was 12 Years a Slave, Dallas Buyers Club, and Her. We haven't talked about Her so far. This is about a guy who basically falls in love with his
operating yeah. system. Yeah.
So what'd you think?
Well, you want me to start?
Yes.
Okay. I'll argue for the plaintiff here.
I'm still going to get out of the way and listen to this.
No, Chris Kelly and I have been arguing about this for about a week now. So we'll take this to the air. So just a quick summary. Just as you said, Joaquin Phoenix downloads this new operating system that has an artificial intelligence quality to it. The voice is played by Scarlett Johansson, and she gets to know him through their interactions. And one of the funnier parts at the beginning is when he's setting up the OS, it asks him one question to get to know him, and is, what is your relationship like with your mother? And that's all it needs to know to be off and running. So anyway, this is directed by Spike Jonze, who I will admit I'm just sort of in the tank for. I like just about anything he does. But it's a really nice story. I like it when movies use kind of an unrealistic scenario like this to reflect on very realistic scenarios, which is our detachment from real people and how we form a relationship. And what would it be like to form a relationship with somebody who doesn't even know what a relationship is? And then once you inform how the person that you are in this relationship with learns about relationships from you and how that can be both good and destructive. This is the best movie of the year. Arguing right. for
crazy,
the
Kelly. I do respect a lot of things about this movie. The opening 30 minutes are very funny, and it seems to be kind of satirizing this hipster culture. These people, Joaquin Phoenix works at a company where he writes handwritten letters for other people. All these people obsessed with these kind of analog notions in the future. Very clever ideas. Joaquin Phoenix is terrific acting against a voice. No mm-hmm. easy feat. But I just found this movie so precious and so emo, and like all of these people are talking about their feelings and that's their only thing that they care about. Like no one in this movie has to worry about paying a bill. No one has to worry about health insurance. They just have to worry about their feelings.
He's got a job.
Yeah.
He writes letters.
He lives in a beautiful apartment
anything. He works for beautifulhandwritenletters.com.
The counter argument to that is that I think it's really focused in that area, and it gets rid of some of that other stuff so it can really focus on the feelings and the back and forth of a relationship.
Oh, I just give me a movie with real problems. I mean, especially this year where we have 12 Years a Slave, we have Captain Phillips. Movies are about things, about real problems and historical issues. And this is just some wispy little thing about a angsty guy in L.A.
I think one of the things I liked about it, though, was that it tells you at the beginning that it's set in the not too distant future. And as this movie is going along, I'm thinking, man, I could kind of see that sort of a more artificially intelligent Siri down the line. And they show a scene where all of these men are exiting the subway station and they're all clearly talking to their own versions of their operating systems. And is it that hard to conceive of a time when people could be more in love with their technology than actual people?
We did a whole one-hour show on that topic a few years ago. So there are people out there. Look at you rolling your eyes.
They're not worthy of a movie.
So Chris Wagner, do you want to break the tie?
Yeah, sure. I'll be the voice of reason here. I thought it was a little too fond of itself, but I also thought it was a really smart movie about intimacy. It's really about fear of intimacy, and it's using this sort of future shock element to get at that, which I think is sort of a timeless theme that it ends up approaching pretty well. And I thought Joaquin Phoenix is, he's kind of turned into this go-to guy for the silent, sensitive, creepy man. And let's face it, there's a lot of those out there.
He's the new Bruce Stern.
There you go.
So that's 2-4 and 1-against, I'd just like to point out.
All right, let's go back to the phone now. We have Gabrielle on the line in Dallas. Hey, Gabrielle.
Hey.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
This is a really exciting show, and I think it's very helpful because it gives more of a, it gives a stronger feeling to the movies than just looking up online and looking at the, you know, ridiculous blasting of video. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
It would be neat. I don't know if you do it often, but it would be neat if it was seasonal. And I just realized it was based on the year end, but my question was, or is, do you know the movie Jane Mansfield's Car? I caught it early this year at the Fort Worth Film Festival. It's got a huge listing of names, and I believe the actor-director is Billy Bob Thornton and Robert De Niro and this and that and the other. It was
Robert Duvall, yeah, I think. Was
Duvall, yep, thank you. Yep.
Well, thanks for bringing it up, Gabrielle.
All right,
these guys have seen it, so let's talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so first, Gabrielle, the check is in the mail. Thank you very much for the nice words. Actually, I believe you saw that at last year's Lone Star Film Festival. I believe that was the 2012 Lone Star Film Festival. But
just now making its way back
out. Just now making its way back around. And I can't for the life of me understand why this movie never really got a real release. I think it kind of went straight to video on demand and DVD, unless they snuck it in and out real quick. But it's directed by Billy Bob Thornton, and it's this multi-generational story about the effects of war and military service on a family, because you have three generations of people. Well, Robert Duvall is a World War I veteran. Billy Bob Thornton is a World War II veteran, and his son is toying with the idea of signing up for the Vietnam draft. And I just thought it was a really excellent look at, again, how war affects a family.
I didn't see it, but I'd like to. It's sitting on my coffee table right now, and it was at
with that recommendation. Yeah,
it was at Toronto last year, and people I talked to there really liked it, and I'm not sure why it didn't get out there either.
Part of the problem is it has a terrible title. The title comes from the Robert Duvall character used to like to take his kids to see car accidents, and the Jane Mansfield's car that was wrecked that ultimately killed her goes on a tour of their little town, and they go and see it. Why they wanted to name the whole movie that, I don't know.
Didn't David Cronenberg make a movie about people who like to see car accidents?
That was a different movie.
We have an email here from Althea who says, the fellas will just have to suck it up on the 3 movies, 1 book issue on The Hobbit. Clearly, Peter Jackson has not made these movies for you. He made them for me, writes Althea, and millions of Tolkien fans all over the world who in their heart of hearts always wished for more Middle of the Earth and all the people who live in it.
You know, congratulations.
Yeah, I think the world divides between Hobbit people and
the
normal
rest of
people. I haven't seen the new Hobbit, but God, like, when does the ship finally sail on these Hobbit things? I mean, is next year's the last one and
yes,
then we're done, or will they
tomorrow? Let next year is
until they find the undiscovered
undiscovered Hobbit.
And they're pure cult objects.
Yeah, but they're also the epitome of the movie that you almost feel like you have to see it because it's so everywhere,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, we were just noticing that Denny's has a tie-in where they have a menu inspired by The Hobbit.
What would that be?
I don't know, but my...
I'd like to point out that the Alamo Draft House actually did that originally last year.
Yeah, I would imagine that they would have, but we were joking. So does that mean it takes you 3 hours to eat and you ultimately leave unsatisfied?
And then you walk it off.
Yeah.
All right. I suppose I have to ask this. Did you guys see the remake of Sound of Music, which was a TV movie? But I'm just curious.
I did.
What'd you think?
I caught a little bit of it.
You know, I got to say, I thought Carrie Underwood kind of comes out of it smelling like roses. You know, yeah, she can't act, but who cares? Like, what an ambitious thing to do. Like, good for you. You know, like, I think it proved that The Sound of Music is an iconic movie that we all love. And, you know, you don't necessarily want to see it done in a overlit, oversized studio, but I appreciated the effort of it, you know, like live theater on TV. That's awesome, you know.
I didn't see it, but I love the idea of live TV.
Yeah.
There's something about that gets my pulse going.
I do too, and from what I caught of it, I thought you could really tell that it was live, and I think sometimes we take for granted the fact that we live in a big town where touring musicals come in all the time. We get to see the best of the best, and you can argue about whether or not Carrie Underwood's good or not or whatever, but there are many people who live out there who don't have access to that kind of And if this is as good as you can get, then I think it's worthwhile.
Yeah. And it's a Christmas season that's a little short on movie musicals, so it kind of filled the gap.
Yeah, that's
there.
Really true.
I was actually wondering if they tried to get Julie Andrews, speaking of Sound of Music, for the part that Emma
Thompson
plays. I think
plays.
She probably would have been too old.
Too old?
Yeah, because the real P.L. Travers I don't even think is as old as Emma Thompson is. So I suspect that was part of the issue there.
We have an email here from Steve, a Trekker. That's how he describes himself. Uh-oh. Any thoughts about notable sci-fi this year, for instance, Star Trek Into Darkness?
I would say that Her is probably the most notable sci-fi. I mean, it really is sort of looking at the implications of what technology brings to our life, for better or for worse. And that is, I think, what good sci-fi does.
That brings up something I wanted to mention really quickly, though. And when you mentioned Into Darkness, the first thing I think of with that is Benedict Cumberbatch, who plays the villain in that movie. And this has been a great year for that guy, because he also plays Julian Assange in the WikiLeaks movie. And he has a small but crucial part in August Osage County, which doesn't come out till January, but he plays Little Charles, who ultimately plays a big role in how that movie works out. He's a guy that I mean, and I bring that up because those three parts couldn't be more different from each other. In addition to, obviously, his work on Sherlock Holmes, this is a guy that when he is in a movie, he's starting to become like, I should see that movie because he's in it.
He's fantastic in 12 Years a Slave.
I didn't even mention 12 Years a Slave. He's one of the best things.
You know,
about that
riffing
movie.
Off that, it's been a really good ensemble year. You know,
you're right.
Big cast movies like The Butler, American Hustle, August Osage County, which we haven't talked about, I thought was terrific. They did a really nice job kind of streamlining Tracy Letts' play about this warring Oklahoma family. It's Meryl Streep, Julia Roberts, Margot Martindale, Juliette Lewis, Julianne Nicholson. It
Ewan
goes
McGregor,
on and on. Ewan McGregor.
Chris Cooper.
And they're all fantastic. It's just so much fun to watch a whole bunch of famous people having a good time with good material. And I think that's really kind of proven in a lot of movies this year.
Should we talk Wolf at all?
Wolf of Wall Street. We have a minute and a half left, okay. So this is perfect.
We'll move on to Wolf of Wall Street.
You know, I am very much a Scorsese guy. I thought it was a little too long, but I thought the highlights were just so very, very, very high. I was thinking about this movie, which is about a penny stock swindler who sort of creates this frat house, revival house combination culture at his stock firm. And there are six or seven scenes in this movie that didn't just make me laugh out loud when I saw them, but as they were coming back to me over the next couple of days, made me laugh out loud all over again. So I would love it if Scorsese would learn to kill his darlings a little bit, maybe trim about a half hour off of this baby, but I liked it a lot.
Well, but you know, this is the first one of the few 3-hour movies I've seen that I think really needed to be 3 hours. And the reason I say that is that this is a movie that's about excess. So you could have trimmed out any of those individual, you know, over the top partying scenes, but you kind of need the collection of them, I think, to bring home the point.
I was fatigued by the end.
I guess I was the one who didn't really like it. I thought the first half was very strong, great scenes, but ultimately, it hewed so closely to the structure and the style of Goodfellas. It's one of these poor schnooks rises and falls that I couldn't get past that. And I didn't think Scorsese had much of a handle on why he was telling us this story.
Well, I think it, and I don't want to give anything away, but there is a side element here of that these Wall Street guys who get into trouble with the law never really quite pay for what they do.
But you're not giving anything away by saying
that. But the movie's not angry about that. I don't think the movie has any real perspective on that. It's just sort of matter of fact about it.
Yeah, I think it is matter of fact.
I like redemption, but sometimes I really respect the absolute lack of redemption in a movie as well.
Fair enough.
Chris Fogner writes for the Dallas Morning News, and he and Stephen Becker of KERA are co-hosts of The Big Screen, which airs Thursday during Morning Edition and All Things Considered. Christopher Kelly writes for Texas Monthly and The New York Times. Guys, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.